Good morning and welcome to this midweek edition of The Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host here, driving the big crazy bus down the highway of life in this little podcast, which just tries its best to stay sane in an insane world, but enjoys the trip along the way. Good morning. Good to have you along. It's a dreary, nasty, rainy day in my neighborhood here, and the cold is coming. So we're bracing for it here in the state of Alabama, in the heart of the Southlands, where when one flake of snow can empty store shelves of milk and bread, we're looking at temperatures getting into the 30s in the next 24 to 36 hours. It's going to be kind of crazy around here. People are already using their fireplaces because you can go outside and smell the firewood burning around us. And it hasn't even been that cold yet. But when I'm prompted to think to myself, well, I need to pick up some firewood, it's going to get cold. And that's how it is for us. Now, I know there are some of you who are listening that are living in places where you already have snow. Well, good for you. You're ready for it. Down here in the sunny South, life is a little different. All we have to have is the threat, the possibility. You know, there's a 3% chance of snow, and boom, the Piggly Wiggly is empty. Everybody goes to the store and goes crazy and buys up all the stuff they think they're going to have for the coming snowpocalypse. And the words haven't even been said here yet. Snow. Not yet. I'm sure that it will happen. Wouldn't it be just fitting if after the longest, hottest summer we have had in a long time, not by any stretch of the imagination, the hottest one we've had, but the longest, hottest one we've had in recent memory, wouldn't it be just absolutely poetic if we had the coldest one, the coldest winter we've had in many, many years? We'll have to see how that pans out. Oh, my gosh. Well, it's been a crazy couple of days in my life, and just as a quick recap before we get into the matters of the day, you're aware, if you've been listening or if you've been paying attention on social media, my great mom fell over the weekend on Saturday, and she broke a hip. And it's not nearly as bad as that sounds, because in the big picture, she had the best break you could possibly have. When she fell, she'd been sitting watching football and didn't know that her foot was asleep. When she stood up, her foot didn't work and she fell. So she falls on a rather thick rug on the hardwood floor that has a pad underneath it. So she had a little bit of padding when she fell, and that may have helped. And the break was not all that bad. It was right up next to the hip joint, but not in the hip joint. And it was a clean, very clean break. The bones didn't move. Everything was still in the same position it should have been. So they were able to go in and put three screws in and just fasten the two sides together. That's what they did. So they did that, and there was just a very minimal incision in order to be able to do that. So she has not been messed up too bad at all. All things considered, could have been a whole lot worse. She could have fractured the hip socket. There would have been replacements necessary. It would have made it that much harder to go through airports and things like that. At any rate, it could have been a lot worse. So she was in hospital for, she went in Saturday evening. She was out, she was out Monday afternoon. And what I ended up doing was we were there for a long time. And I told you the story on Monday about how things went for us Sunday night. And then I went back and picked her up Monday afternoon, took her home, stayed with her at her home overnight. And yesterday, which is why there was no podcast yesterday, I just didn't have a way to produce one. And then made it back home late yesterday afternoon after a night with very little sleep. And so yesterday I just crashed and burned. That's pretty much what happened to me. And when my alarm went off this morning, I was not happy, just not happy. But I told my wife I could have slept for three or four more hours. I think I probably could have very easily with the rain and everything. It would have been really easy to do. But no, the alarm goes off. I have things to do. I've got to be here. Going to be here and hang with you guys. So here we are. And now you're caught up. So that's been my life for the last few days. It's been crazy. There's been confusion. There's been traveling all over the place. There's been taking care of loved ones. There's been all sorts of stuff. But life is back to semi-normal again after the crazy weekend. All right. And now it's not like I haven't abandoned my mom. She has home health care coming in 3 days a week. She has a house guest. And by the way, this all happened when she had stuff planned. My brother and his wife are coming to town from Alaska. Actually, today, I think it's today they're coming in. And they're rather than hanging with at her house, they're going to go to my dad's in Pensacola. And stay there through the weekend, and he's coming back Saturday. Also, an old friend of my mom's from her travels, somebody that she met years ago and comes through once a year for a visit or twice a year just to hang and visit with her. David's in town, so David's over there now, and he's hanging out with her. So she's taken care of, so I don't have to go stay in the spare bedroom anymore. I'm home and back at the studio. So she's doing well. Anyway, this all happened in the midst of stuff she had planned. So she was supposed to have David coming in and my brother and his wife coming in and all kinds of stuff. And she was going to be, you know, hosting them as they were in town. And then she falls and has this accident. And it just makes life weird. But she's up and around. She's moving slowly with a walker, but she's up and around. And she was making me tired yesterday. I mean, just like I'd turn around. I'd get up to go check on something and come back and she would be gone. She was doing laundry. She was doing all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, you know, you can just point and say, hey, go do that because I'm here. But no, she's a very active person for 85. She's very active. And like I've said before, there was a point in her life we used to joke that the only way she could be more active is if she had a slot on the space shuttle. And she's still that way at 85. Oh, my gosh. She's wearing me out. Well, the news is wearing me out, too, because there's so much insanity in the world. Let's look at what we'll possibly get to today. Kanye's new album is making a lot of waves. I actually listened to it yesterday, and I got to say, it's not my style, okay? Personally, it's not my style of music. I do appreciate it because I really do appreciate a whole lot of styles of music, everything from classical to hip-hop. I really do enjoy certain things out of pretty much every genre of music, but I bought the album after I left my mom's house yesterday, listened to it on the way home, and I was very impressed, very impressed. The production quality is stellar. The lyric content is intriguing, and it's very deep for somebody who's just apparently just in the last couple of years stepped into the faith life. And the variety of the what's happening on the album is also interesting as well. And like I said, it's not my personal style, but I found myself really enjoying it. And from time to time, wide-eyed at what I heard. And there's a reason it's making waves. And there's a reason... Did I read correctly? It's supposed to debut at number one on the Billboard charts. It's just a very impressive album. Now, it may not be your cup of tea. That's fine. And you may raise an eyebrow and question: is this real for this guy? Is it for real? Because you know he's been known to be, you know, all over the map. Time will tell. But I will say this, if you have doubts, then what you should be doing, especially if you're a Christian person, is you should be praying for Kanye and his family because he's reached some new challenges. One of the stories we'll talk about a little bit later on is his new rules for his 6-year-old daughter. Also, possibly, hopefully I have time to get into something Dave Chappelle said on an awards program the other day. That should be interesting. The White House photographer has tried to stir up some conspiracy about the al-Baghdadi raid photo. And the Democrats are facing some new challenges as a result of the Baghdadi raid and the success there. William Barr is He says the U.S. attorney is investigating this Russia probe, the origins of it. They're making some incredible progress. We'll take a look at that in a few. The Democrat impeachment resolution, the text was released, and it's not surprising. Honestly, it's not surprising, but it's very telling. And we'll start off talking about Shifty Adam Schiff. He's the House Intelligence Committee chairman. He's reportedly telling witnesses testifying in this impeachment inquiry not to answer questions by certain Republicans. While speaking with reporters on Capitol Hill, House Minority Whip Steve Scalise slammed the secretive process, pointing out that Schiff gets to choose all the witnesses, but he's also directing witnesses not to answer questions he doesn't want the witnesses to answer if they're asked by Republicans. Now, if this is true, this is by definition witness tampering. According to U.S. Code 1512, subsection 1512, anyone who knowingly uses intimidation, threatens, or corruptly persuades another person or attempts to do so or engages in misleading conduct toward another person with intent to cause or induce any person to withhold testimony has tampered with a witness. If Schiff is directing witnesses not to answer questions, he's effectively trying to get them to withhold testimony. If this is truly an open and fair process, both sides should be able to ask questions of the witnesses, and Adam Schiff should not be preventing witnesses from answering questions or stopping Republicans from asking questions. This is clearly not a fair process. Scalise said this has been a tainted process from the start. What happened today confirms even worse just how poorly Adam Schiff is handling this process, denying the ability for Republicans to even ask basic questions that are critical to the heart of whether or not a president of the United States is impeached. We've talked about this before. In this particular situation, the Democrats want complete and total control of every aspect of this situation, what they're working on right now, this kangaroo court. They want control of every aspect of it. And this is very typical for progressives in government. They don't tolerate dissent. They don't tolerate differing opinion. They don't tolerate anything that conflicts with their agenda. That's just progressive behavior. If the old William F. Buckley quote, you remember about liberals, how they talk a lot about being open to different opinions, but they're shocked when there are different opinions. And they're insulted. And this is the nature of the beast that we're dealing with in Washington, D.C., the progressive monster that's been slowly and progressively, if I can use the word, taking over our government. The progressivism is completely intolerant. They talk about other people being racist, being homophobic, and the like. They talk about others in negative terms, but everything they point out in others is true of them. So they're completely intolerant of the process which should be taking place, which is due process. The president deserves, under the law, due process. The progressives don't want to grant him due process, because if they grant him due process, that means all the facts will be heard, all of the information will be entered, all of the proper questions will be asked, and the truth will be known. And if the truth is known, then they can't achieve their goals. And this is how progressivism / liberalism / leftism / socialism has always worked everywhere it has tried to take root. The first thing it does is lie. It changes the information. And then when it gains enough control, it keeps people from revealing the lie and punishes them when they do reveal the lie. Because generally speaking, people are smart enough to understand what the lie means when they have heard the lie. And they understand it in its proper context. And the last thing progressives want people to do is to catch on to what they're doing. This is why the Kavanaugh hearings were so devastating for the Democrats, because they revealed themselves to be what they actually are. And I, among others, I'm not alone in this, I believe that President Trump sets the stage for them to reveal their cards every day. He does it on Twitter. He does it with the press. He does it everywhere. He says things which make them knee-jerk and react and reveal their true nature to the American people. And the last thing they want the American people to see is what they really are. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. It's the midweek edition. It's a rainy Wednesday here in the sunny Southlands. And regardless of where you're listening, I'm glad you're there. Thank you so much. I've said that. I say that. I try to say that at least once a day. I really do appreciate the fact that you're listening, regardless of when and where that is. Thank you very much. And thank you for sharing the podcast with people. I appreciate the fact that you're doing that. It's funny. I dip in and look at things from time to time, and it surprises me. Wow, there's somebody. Wow, I didn't know there was anybody in that state listening. Well, congratulations. Thanks for joining the weird little club that we are here. It's good to have you along. Oh, my gosh. The text of the Democrat impeachment resolution was released yesterday afternoon. It further confirms the Democrats are attempting to remove Trump via a coup, which, under the guise of impeachment, because they're really not, and we've been talking about this for a while, they're really, really not following the process of impeachment. They're saying the word a lot, and of course, Maxine Waters has been saying, you know, the word for quite some time. She's been out there. Every time she gets in public, she screams,
"Impeach 45!"
Right, and so we've been hearing this talk about impeachment for quite some time. And I've said in the past, and I'll say it again right now, that I believe Maxine Waters was in the same meetings with everyone else, and they were all told, "We're going to impeach this guy." They were told that from the very beginning. And that, of course, was leaked by people to the press, and the press has echoed that since the very beginning. Since the day after Election Day, we have been hearing from the left that their intent has been to impeach the duly elected president of the United States of America. 45. And so they've been working on this for quite some time. And we know from looking at the last couple of times, or the two other times, Clinton and was it Nixon? And there was some other. At any rate, trust me, my brain is my memory is a sieve after the last few days. At any rate, we've seen this happen before. We know the process that they have to go through, and they're not following the process. Now, they have said they're going to hold a vote, but please, I encourage you, pay very, very, very close attention to how that transpires. Because what they're talking about doing is not that vote, the one that needs to be held. The content of what they're voting on will not be what they want everyone to believe it is. Just watch carefully. House Intelligence Chairman Adam Schiff announced Monday that his committee will be moving to a new phase in this sham impeachment inquiry into President Trump. This is coming to us from Gateway Pundit, by the way. It's an article by Christina Lila. For the last month, Adam Schiff has conducted unclassified impeachment hearings behind closed doors, only to selectively leak portions of the testimonies to the media in order to damage President Trump. Quote, "This week," this is from Schiff's statement, "this week we will bring to the floor a resolution that establishes the format for open hearings that will be conducted by the House Intelligence Committee as part of the House's ongoing impeachment inquiry, as well as procedures to transmit any evidence or report to the Judiciary Committee. This is a resolution, not an article of impeachment. The measure is to establish some process procedures. Under normal impeachment proceedings, minority members of the committees would have equal subpoena power, and they would be able to call in witnesses. This sham impeachment process is denying the president due process and denying the ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes, the right to call his own witnesses. According to the impeachment resolution, Nunes can only issue subpoenas, call in witnesses, and introduce evidence with Chairman Adam Schiff's permission. The resolution says this: to allow for full evaluation of minority witness requests, the ranking minority member, Nunes, may submit to the chair, Schiff, in writing, any requests for witness testimony relevant to the investigation described in the first section of this resolution within 72 hours after the notice is given for the first hearing. The resolution blocks Nunes from subpoena power without Schiff's permission. Quote, the ranking minority member, Nunes, of the Permanent Select Committee is authorized with the concurrence of the chair, Schiff, to require, as deemed necessary to the investigation, by subpoena or otherwise, the attendance and testimony of any person, including at a taking of a deposition, and the production of books, records, correspondence, memoranda, papers, and documents, and by the interrogatory, the finishing of information. The resolution also states that if Schiff declines to concur with Nunes' proposed action, Nunes has the right to refer to the Democrat-controlled committee for a decision. He has the right to refer to the Democrat-controlled committee for a decision. Oh, what could possibly go wrong there? Yikes. So, what we have here is what they're calling a Soviet-style process. You have a party in power denying their opposition, the other party, the due process, the legal due process they should have. And this, as I was saying before, this is how progressivism, leftism, liberalism, socialism, this is how that works. Gain power, deny anyone else access to power, control everything. Tell everyone you're doing it for their good. You're fighting for them. You're there for them. It's all for the good of everyone. It's best for everyone. We're being fair. Wow. No, they're being everything but fair. What they're doing is seizing power and control, which is the heart of the progressive movement. It's power and control. And I've said this before. Those who are screaming the loudest in favor of what the Democrats are doing right now will be the first ones to suffer if the Democrats ever get the complete power and control they so deeply desire. Because those who are all for rabble-rousing and social unrest in order to get their wishes will still be rabble-rousers after the new regime takes over. And when something happens they don't like and they rabble-rouse because of that, then the new socialist regime will squash them. In country after country around the world which has embraced socialism because, they have the right people to embrace socialism. Everybody else in the past did it wrong. The wrong people were involved. Well, every time the right people have been involved at the right time, in the right place, with the right mentality, the people who have objected have been imprisoned, have been put in concentration camps, have been put in re-education camps, or they've just disappeared. We've seen it around the world. When socialism promises equality, the only equality is equal suffering. Power and control for the good of the people. And how can they do this? That goes back to what I've been telling you. Progressives, socialists, wholeheartedly believe they are intellectually and morally superior. And because of that, nobody else can really understand. And so, since nobody else can really understand, they have to run everything for the good of everyone else. Yes, you did interpret what I just said correctly. They believe you're too stupid to manage your own life. They believe you're too stupid to understand how government should work. And they believe our founders were too stupid as well. So, as a result, they rewrite history and make our founders look evil, make them look small, petty, prejudiced. And everyone who agrees with them is painted with the same broad brush. So, Adam Schiff, in reality, is following in the footsteps of totalitarians who have gone before him. He and his cohorts are only concerned with gaining as much power and control over the process of government as possible. Which is why it's so important for us all to be paying attention and not allow the Democrats to gain control. Because once they gain that foothold again, let me tell you something. If the Democrats gain control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency, all three again, this country will cease to exist as we know it. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. So good to have you along today. On this day before the cold wave hits the sunny Southlands. Oh, my. Oh, let's see here. I'm doing a quick shuffle here because I want to move a couple of stories to now that I had set up for later. Okay, here we go. Off the top, I mentioned Kanye's new album. And I'm going to have to listen to it again. I listened to it once yesterday. And I need to listen back through it again because I know there's stuff that's going to jump back out at me again. But he's in the news a lot lately because he's kind of shaking things up. Here he is, this prolific producer, this artist who has himself called himself a genius. This guy is he's really shaking a lot of stuff up. So. It's understandable that he's getting a lot of attention, and he's also getting some hate. Of course he's getting some hate, because when you push back against that progressive mindset, that mindset of intolerance, then of course what you get in response is condemnation and hatred. That's what happens. Well, it's more than just his music that's changing. At a time when kids are so liberated they run their own lives, dictate rules to parents, can even choose their own gender. One celebrity's beginning to rage against the lunacy that liberalism has created. This is a commentary coming from the Western Journal, written by Jared Harris. In a Tuesday interview with Zane Lowe for Beats One Radio, Kanye West revealed how Christianity has shaped his worldview and the standards he sets for his own family. One of the new rules West has for his daughter, her name is North, yes, her name is Northwest, is that the six-year-old is no longer allowed to wear revealing clothing. Kanye says, I don't think this is because it's the culture. That's according to E! News. He says, I don't think North should wear crop tops just because I had her wearing a slip dress when she was 2 years old. I think and feel differently now that I'm a Christian, now that I'm founder of a $3 billion organization and married for 5 years. Kanye's wife, Kim Kardashian West, says her husband's other rule has been a point of contention in the house. She told E! News, North is trying to get in on the makeup, but she's being blocked heavily because her dad has stopped all makeup for her until she's a teenager. Good news. I mean, come on, she's six. It's a big discussion, she says, a fight, a big fight in the household right now, but it is what's best. Although household rules banning young girls from wearing makeup and revealing clothes may seem like a no-brainer for some people, they're a complete rebellion against modern American culture. It seems like nothing is more indicative of this superficial culture obsessed with temporary fame than social media. The obsession with fleeting attention is so strong that experts are even blaming platforms like Facebook and Instagram for the threefold increase in suicide among certain youth groups in recent years. Keeping a young child, especially one raised by two superstar parents, out of that lifestyle could prove to be a Herculean task. For regular Americans, even a trip to the public library could end in exposure to drag queen story hour, a perversion of traditional gender and sexuality. Kanye, meanwhile, eventually had to get away from the big city and all the problems and temptations that come with it. West said his move to Wyoming was partly inspired by a desire to get away from the sexuality and immorality of Los Angeles, where massive billboards promote liquor and strip clubs. His rules may be painted as restrictive and even cruel by a Hollywood obsessed with outward appearances, but it looks like popular culture's influence over Kanye West is at an end. And that's a very interesting story about a guy who is a cultural icon. And some might even say a cultural catalyst, one who, when dropped into a situation, changes things. At least that's what he's trying to do. It's interesting. It's an interesting look at what's happened in this man's life and how things are changing. And his wife even saying that his rules for his six-year-old are for the best. They're in agreement that this is for the best. The little girl, and you have to remember, she's a little girl. She's six. And fighting to wear makeup. She's 6 years old. This is the culture. And that's something I've actually heard him say, is that he's rebelling against the culture. He's fighting against the culture, because now he realizes that the culture is sick and twisted, and it's lost, and it's groping its way through life in the darkness because it's blind. He sees that now, and he's saying that now, and as a result of that, the culture is not happy with him. Gee, go figure. The culture isn't happy with him. Somebody else the culture is not happy with is Dave Chappelle. His Netflix special dropped a month or so ago. I watched it. I laughed a little. Didn't laugh a lot. But I did laugh really hard a couple of times. The language is vulgar. There are certain racial expressions that white people wouldn't be able to get away with. But as I said, when I talked about it then, he uses the N-word like white guys would say guy or dude. It's just that culture. So now there's going to be an award show that's going to be on PBS in January. And at the taping of this award show, he had some things to say. He gave a characteristically iconoclastic answer. This happened Sunday, to a reporter who questioned him on whether political correctness has gone too far. Speaking to Judy Kurtz of The Hill before accepting this year's Mark Twain Prize for American Humor. That's a big award, by the way. Chappelle began his reply by reeling off uncontroversial platitudes about the topic. Quote, "Political correctness has its place. We all want to live in a polite society. We just have to work on the levels and come to an agreement of what that actually looks like. I personally am not afraid of other people's freedom of expression. I don't use it as a weapon. It just makes me feel better, and I'm sorry if I hurt anybody." But the seemingly safe response from the veteran comedian appeared to be a setup for a classic bait and switch. Et cetera, yada, yada, yada. Everything I'm supposed to say, Chappelle says after rolling his eyes. He then punctuated his answer by blowing a raspberry. Chappelle ignored the smoking ban, lit up a cigarette on the stage while he was accepting the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor, a lifetime achievement award bestowed annually by the Kennedy Center. He said, "I want everyone in America right now to look at me. Look at me, smoking indoors. I didn't ask anybody. What are they going to do? Kick me out before I get the prize?" It's called leverage. I don't care who you are. That's funny. Chappelle went on to address woke backlash to his latest Netflix stand-up special, Sticks and Stones, in which he mocks LGBT alphabet people, Michael Jackson's accusers, supporters and opponents of abortion, and uptight comedy audiences. He told NPR ahead of the award ceremony, "It's the best part of the First Amendment to me that I'm able to express myself this way and make a viable living doing it." Chappelle's special divided viewers on one hand and professional reviewers on the other. It has a 35% score from critics and a 99% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. That particular point in itself is very telling. When the critics only give it a 35% score, but the audience gives it a 99% score, you see how disconnected the entertainment industry itself is from the people they're entertaining. The entertainment industry lives in its own little bubble. And I have to clarify, when I refer to the entertainment industry, I'm not just talking about comedians and singers and actors, TV stars, movie stars. I'm not just talking about them. I'm also talking about sports stars, professional athletes. Because, as we have seen in recent years, ESPN is just as liberal as the entertainment industry. Those attitudes are shared. It's all entertainment. It's just different kinds of entertainment. Sports is entertainment, just like movies are entertainment. You spend your money to be distracted for a while. Chappelle suggested everybody relax. He said he knows comedians who are very racist in their jokes. He said, "Don't get mad at them. Don't hate on them. Man, it's not that serious. The First Amendment is first for a reason. Second Amendment is just in case the first one doesn't work out." Wow. So, you may disagree. You may be offended by his choice of words. You may not like his approach, but he understands the First Amendment, and he understands why the Second Amendment is there. So he's not all wrong. A lot more people could learn what Dave Chappelle seems to already know. More after the break, when the Daily Perspective continues. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Hi there. In the final segment for this midweek edition of the podcast, good to have you along. I honestly say that out of habit, but I really do mean it. Well, let's see here. I was going to talk about, there were a couple of things I teased earlier. I shuffled them to the bottom. I'm just not going to talk about them because there are upon looking at the list, I thought, no, let's go here instead. First up, you know, right now there are wildfires going crazy in California, and Jerry Brown is talking about how this is all, what is it? It's climate change. It's the horror of climate change. Seriously, I'm not kidding. Former California Democrat Governor Jerry Brown warned that the recent wildfires in California are a taste of what is to come if our leaders do not act on climate change. Quote, "I said it was the new normal a few years ago. This is serious, but this is only the beginning. This is only a taste of the horror and the terror that will occur in decades. And it will occur in various spots. In America, in Africa, in Canada. It's unpredictable, other than the fact that it will get worse in present trajectory. Washington under President Trump is doing very little, and even the Congress has been unable to mobilize under Washington." Brown released his statement, as several wildfires prompted current California Governor Gavin Newsom to declare a state of emergency. Newsom, also a Democrat, received a grant from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, to combat the brush fires spreading throughout Los Angeles. Democrat Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti also signed an emergency declaration within Los Angeles to secure more resources to combat the fire, which broke out around 1:30 a.m. over the 405 freeway near the Getty Center Museum. KABC reported that the wildfires burned more than 500 acres of land. As of 7 a.m. the other day, when was this? This was yesterday? I think it was yesterday. Yeah. And Los Angeles Fire Department officials said that more than 10,000 residents and businesses were under mandatory evacuation orders. Even Los Angeles Lakers basketball star LeBron James tweeted Monday he had to evacuate his home. The recent wildfires have also led California's largest utility, Pacific Gas and Electric, to shut off power to 2 million customers for safety reasons. And if you're wondering what those safety reasons are, they're saying this was all caused by power lines sparking and arcing and setting brush afire. And that gets back to the reality of the situation. Jerry Brown says it's climate change, but in the real world, instead of La La Land, where the environmentalists, the climate change advocates, where they live, in the real world, the reason for the fire was because that brush was there. It's because of extremely, insanely bad forestry management. Forestry management which prevents the clearing of kindling dry underbrush because they claim it's environment for certain animals. So, oh no, we have to protect these animals. Oh no, you can't do this. When people in forestry know that if you don't clear dead vegetation, dead trees, dead brush, that there are going to be fires. And that fires are nature's way of clearing the underbrush. And fires, wildfires, are nature's way of managing itself. And that if we don't want to suffer the consequences of the fires ourselves, we, as human beings, have to manage the land to prevent the fires. And if we don't manage the land to prevent the fires, we have fires! It's not rocket science. It's not that difficult to understand. But because progressives believe they are much more intelligent than everyone else, they refuse to listen to the people who have real-world experience and knowledge. And as a result, millions of dollars in property damage occur. People lose their homes. People lose their lives. People lose their possessions. People suffer whenever progressives run government. It's happening in California right now. There are fires which could have easily been prevented if simple forestry management had been adhered to. And now they're shutting off power to lots and lots and lots of people who are living in the dark. It's becoming a social media meme. California's greatest pickup line right now. Hey, I have electricity. Ba-dum-tsh. Ladies and gentlemen, progressivism strikes again. God love them. Oh, here's some more progressive news. A prominent teachers union is training its members to inject identity politics into nearly all aspects of teaching and included in its journals biased and debunked information. The American Federation of Teachers, the nation's second largest teachers union, took to the pages of its quarterly journal, American Educator, to instruct members to incorporate liberal ideology in classroom teachers. According to the College Fix, the main theme of the issue is confronting bias in schools. But the essay that kicks off the issue almost treats the theme as an afterthought. That essay, written by AFT President Randy Weingarten, wrote that President Donald Trump, quote, has fanned biases that aim to dehumanize the other and that erode our democracy. And said teachers can't ignore Trump's bigotry and cruelty or the fact that his erratic behavior is intended to create chaos and confusion. Weingarten also wrote that Trump is, quote, leading a homegrown hate movement, end quote. The implication is clear. The children need to be taught these things about the President of the United States, even though it is an ideological point, no matter how much the left claims it to be fact. The College Fix also pointed out that the 44-page issue includes 13 references to tolerance, 15 to equity, 32 to racial identity, 33 to racism, 34 to diversity, 39 to discrimination, 52 to prejudice, 54 to hate, 79 to identity, and 102 references to bias. Some of the people who wrote articles for the issue promoted misleading and biased information in an effort to suggest that America is racist and in need of further leftist ideology in the schools. For example, one article in the issue was written by staff from the Southern Poverty Law Center, a notoriously biased organization that paints pro-family, pro-Christian organizations as hate groups in the same league as the KKK. The authors, Maureen Costello and Cassandra Dillard, cite the SPLC's woefully inadequate report from 3 years ago that claimed hate crimes increased after Trump was elected. The report relied on unproven and unchecked allegations of incidents involving racial slurs and symbols, bigotry, and the harassment of minority children in the nation's schools. The SPLC did not confirm the anonymous reports it received, some of which turned out to be false. Further, the SPLC's report ignored 2,000 similarly anonymous reports of anti-white hate incidents in schools. The authors of the article try to downplay these allegations by writing, quote, teachers also reported a handful of incidents involving name-calling directed at white people, end quote. It should also be noted that the SPLC is currently conducting an internal investigation after allegations from current and former employees surfaced claiming the organization's a hotbed of racism and sexism. The allegations led to the firing of the group's co-founder and the resignation of its president. Another article in the journal from Adam Sanchez implores teachers to teach students an anti-American version of the country's history, which emphasizes racism and inequality over all else. That version of American history is from Marxist historian Howard Zinn. Look that guy up. His work was criticized by a Stanford University history expert as a crusade built on secondary sources of questionable provenance, omission of exculpatory evidence, leading questions, and shaky connections between evidence and conclusions. They're actually teaching students what to think, not how to think. And that's the problem with America today. And that's it for me. See you tomorrow. God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.